You are listening to the Cycling Podcast at the 2018 Tour de France in association with Rafa. From grand tours to group rides, the Champs-Élysées to coffee shops, Rafa exists to celebrate the world's most beautiful sport. Today we are in Mende.
Going to happen today? I suggest the brake. You think it's going to go too fast?
The brake is going to go. I believe it's going to take a while, huh? Because you know you see these roads up and down. You see the wind; it's tricky. But I believe it will go down to the favorites at Mende because it's a very very tough climb, and I believe I see a very very strong Froome today. He wants to win, and I believe he will win today.
Do you think he'll win the Tour?
I don't think he wins the Tour, but I think he wins today. It will put new suspicions out there if he's still the leader, but he cannot take 1.5 minutes of Geraint Thomas, and he won't, and he don't want to do that, but he wants to win the stage too. And I believe he will. Another favorite today is, of course, Alaphilippe. We see the shape he's in. It's a perfect, perfect climb for him. And why not Romain Bardet? It's very steep slopes, and this is a climb that suits him very good.
Maybe Dumoulin and Geraint Thomas maybe might not suit them quite so well.
I don't think that they will stay with the favourites today, or with the other favourites of the race, but I think today is a very, very special stage. I'm very excited to see what's going to happen.
I like these very precise predictions. Who's going to win the Tour?
That will be Thomas. I hope so. I think so.
Do you think there's friction in the team between Thomas and Froome?
No, but I think they laugh every morning when they open up the L'Équipe and read what they write about it and all the estimations. I believe there's no friction at all in the team.
Hello, my name's Richard Moore. I'm with Francois Thomazeau.
Hi there.
And Lionel Burney.
Hello, Richard.
And who were we played in with at the start there, chaps?
That sounded very much like 2010 Tour de France champion Andy Schleck.
That's amazing, Lionel, because that's exactly who it was. That's exactly who it was.
How did you know?
and getting pretty much everything wrong there in his predictions, which he said at the start. There's good rationale behind all of it.
This is why speculation is a fool's game.
Huh? Tell Andy Schleck that. Anyway, I spent the day with Andy Schleck, who is here with Škoda. Working with the Škoda team, taking that's Škoda to some people, taking VIPs on the race and up in helicopters. I didn't get up in a helicopter, sadly, but
you're a VIP.
No, I'm not a VIP either, and that's why I didn't get up in a helicopter. But I did have a very interesting day, and we chatted well for the whole stage, so 4 hours, and that'll be a kilometer zero next week. Good luck with whoever's editing that one.
Wow. Now I'm looking forward to that. I mean, we haven't heard an awful lot from Andy Schleck since he retired as a rider. So I'm really interested to hear what he says about life after cycling as well as his career.
Well, fascinating on that because I said things about how he adjusted to retirement, which I didn't know. And indeed, he said he'd never actually spoken about it. And really interesting admitting to some of the difficulties he had in adapting to life after cycling. So that'll come next week. But it was very interesting as well to get his thoughts on the race as the race was unfolding.
Appropriate that you spent the day in a car. We spent the day in our car driving the course today from Saint-Paul-Trois-Châteaux to Mende, 188 kilometres. Certainly the most beautiful stage of the Tour de France so far through the Gorge de l'Ardèche. And we're recording tonight's podcast in the car as well because, well, we have to get to our hotel and have some dinner, and it's a big traffic jam off the hill in Mende, isn't it?
What happened today? The tale of the etape, as you say, we all spent the day in our respective cars, but what happened in the stage?
Well, it was stage 14, and it was won by Omar Fraile of the Astana team, twice King of the Mountains winner in the Vuelta. He won a stage of the Giro last year. He's riding for Astana now, and he was part of a 32-man break that went clear early. In that break were some really strong names, Peter Sagan in the green jersey, Julian Alaphilippe in the polka dot jersey, former yellow jersey wearer Greg Van Avermaet was in there. Who else? Pierre Hollande, Philippe Gilbert, Jasper Stuyven.
You don't have to name them all.
No, I'm not going to name them all, but it was a really powerful break. Gorka Izagirre.
Yeah, there was. I think there was 5 Direct Energy riders and 4 Cofidis. I mean, the French teams are, well, you know, went for the break today unsuccessfully, but...
Well, Team Sky and the other GC riders would have been happy to see that break go. We saw the course, all of us saw the course at first hand, you know, really twisty and narrow in little villages, and not the sort of course that you want the race to be really open on.
Did you know that the split into 3 groups right at the start? I mean, it was a frantic start. Quickstep went to the front and absolutely nailed it. And there were 3 groups, and Bardet was in, at one point, I think the second group. One of the problems was Bob Jungels was in the 3rd group. And so it all came back together because it was very windy at the start initially, and then the wind died down completely.
Yeah, and once the break had gone, it was in everyone's interest really to let it go and let the gap open up. So we had, in effect, 2 races. The race for the stage win was, well, it was really ignited by Jasper Stuyven of Trek Segafredo with 35 kilometres to go. He went on his own, and I mean, he showed his classics credentials. He got a minute and something up the road, a minute and 20 at one point, I think, and he was looking really good. But the problem was, how would he fare on that final climb, the Côte de la Croix Neuve?
Monte Jalabert.
Well, Monte Jalabert, where Laurent Jalabert won in 95, of course. And, well, we got our answer, didn't we? Stuyven, who co-owns a chocolate shop near Leuven in Belgium with his uncle, where he was hoping for the sweet taste of success, but as he hit the climb, his advantage melted like a box of chocolates left on the back seat of a car on a hot late afternoon in
Florid
the summer.
Florid podcast.
anyway... Frehley went hard right from the bottom, and he said in the press conference afterwards that was his plan, to try and close down Stuyven as quickly as possible. And Alaphilippe really hesitated just that moment too long. Alaphilippe did bridge up to Stuyven, but Frehley had already gone, and he won the stage. Very impressive it was too. Behind, the GC riders, well, they had quite a few little skirmishes, and the one man that never looked in any difficulty at any point, other than Primoz Roglic, of course, who clipped off and rode pretty much solo all the way to the top, and that tells me that he's going to be a factor in the Pyrenees, I think. But the only other rider who didn't falter at any point was Geraint Thomas. Chris Froome and Tom Dumoulin were at the back and even off the back of that group at points. Bardet lost a bit of time, so did Quintana, so did everybody else. So a really secure-looking day for Geraint Thomas in the yellow jersey. All the jerseys remain on the same shoulders, and tomorrow we go to Carcassonne.
Don't want to put you up for too many things there, Lionel. It was a good effort considering you're driving as well. But I think it was 140 that Stuyven had at the foot of the climb. And it was Thomas De Gendt who actually went first. He got a little gap, and Frehley bridged up to him and then went. And then, you know, Alaphilippe left it quite late. And I thought he got it spot on, but not quite, because Frehley, you know, bridged across Stuyven, went past him, and he'd gone in. Otherwise, the interest then turned 20 minutes down the road to the main bunch and all the favourites. And it was never a climb that was going to create many big time differences. It wasn't going to shake up the overall classification too much. But it is a fascinating climb to watch because it's so steep. And, you know, if you falter just a little bit, a gap will open. And we did see Froome in a little bit of trouble. I thought at one point, Dumoulin, hard to tell if he's in trouble or just, you know, managing his effort extremely well. But as you say, Lionel, Geraint Thomas looked absolutely comfortable.
It's funny because this morning I was at the podium talking with Seb Piquet, our, you know, a great friend of the podcast, who is the tour speaker on the radio tour. He was looking for guys to interview, asking me, well, what do you think? I said, well, you know, it's very often Spaniards win on the Côte de la Croix Neuve. Remember Marcos Serrano, Contador won here in the Pyrenees, Purito Rodriguez won here as well. So, and I think he went to Omar Frehley, who was just passing by. So great great insight from Seb Piquet. And
great insight from Francois.
Well, I just said a Spaniard and a Spaniard won. And the second interesting thing is, remember that stage one at the beginning of the tour, was it last year, when the Stuyven and Alaphilippe finished behind Peter Sagan and missed it by a little bit. Since then, Alaphilippe delivered and won, you know, races Flèche Wallonne and won a Tour de France stage. Jasper Stuyven is still a little bit short of that, going up that gear that makes, you know, that makes it to victory. And the funny thing about Alaphilippe today is, in the past he was kind of impatient, going too early, and this time he was too patient and went too late. So there's a little bit of adjustment to be done there.
It was fascinating sitting with Andy Schleck while the action unfolded, because he knows Philippe Gilbert very well, of course. In fact, Philippe Gilbert beat the Schleck brothers to Liège-Bastogne-Liège 1 year, I think 2011, perhaps 10 or 11, I can't remember which year, but he knows him very well. He's one of the riders he sort of, you know, keeps in touch with a bit and says hello to. But I have to say, he was very sceptical about the prospect of Gilbert working in order to set up an Alaphilippe victory. And I spoke to Wilfred Peters at the finish and asked him a little bit about that, and he said no, it was definitely a stage for Alaphilippe. It was too hard a climb for Gilbert. But it was noticeable that when there were groups, little groups and riders going off up the front, Gilbert could have been marking those, bringing it back, and tended not to be.
Well, I spoke to Gilbert, and he said that he blamed Gorka Izagirre, who was the first of the group of 32 to attack. And he said, Izagirre attacked too early, and it completely broke the cohesion of the leading group, he said. And then it was very difficult to chase and work for Alaphilippe, which he did. We saw him near the finale leading the group, but it might have been a little bit too late.
Gilbert did do a good job in the end. He was called back to the Quickstep car at one point, and he did a good job in the end leading into the climb. I managed to grab a word with Jasper Stuyven at the finish, just after he crossed the line, actually, and was reflecting on his near miss.
It's more disappointment. I didn't start my attack to just come on TV. It's, when I went, it was for victory, and I think I paced good, but it's just such a steep part. It's really hard for me with my 80 kilos to keep speed, and I knew it was going to be hard, so it is what it is, and I tried. I think if you passed me maybe 200 meters later, it would have been possible, but now I just didn't have any acceleration on the steep part. For the moment, it flattened out. There I could gain speed again, but there he had the 10 or 15 second gap already, and I couldn't close it anymore. Afterwards, you can always say it was too early or this and that, but it was a big group, some strong guys, climbers, so I had to go before and not wait till they make an explosion. So I played, went all in, and I lost.
So that was Jasper Stuyven. And Francois, I think you spoke to his sports director at Trek Segafredo.
Yes, I spoke to Alain Galopin, who's always been a great fan of Jasper Stuyven. You know, he really thinks he's a guy who's, you know, progressing every year and really close to that level in which at last he will start winning a classic or a tour stage. He pointed out, you'll hear it in the interview, that Sean Kelly didn't win a classic before the age of 28. So he says Stuyven has still got a little bit of time, and it'll come soon. Well, we can listen to Galopin.
We know the talent of Jasper Stuyven, great, great rider, always close, and once again, close but not enough.
Yeah, but we need to have to have luck to win in this situation. I think 2 years ago, everybody remembers that he was close, just missed 300 meters to have the win and the yellow jersey with something. Today, I think he did well. He has no chance when he weighed the last climb to follow Slater and Izagirre in the far to the finish was a good idea. After he saw they are not strong enough, and he tried to do alone, to go alone was also good. And at the end, it's a pity that everybody was pulling behind. I understand the quick step, but the other one, they need to gamble a little bit, but they pull. But everybody do his own race. Just miss a small thing in the last climb, and after the final was easy.
It'll click one day because he's so talented. I mean, he really deserves one of those great wins, doesn't he?
Yeah. No, he deserves a win in the classic, a win in this kind of tour. But he's still, even if he's 25, he's still young. Not to remember the story of cycling, because not a lot of people they remember the history of cycling here. Sean Kelly won his first classic at 28 years old.
That's true.
And at some time when you you go behind in the history of cycling, you have many things similar as today.
So great future for Jasper, whatever.
Well, no, but we know that he was every classic this year he was top 10. He was the only one to be from Milan-San Remo to Roubaix. He was top 10 all the time. Good weather, bad weather, he's always there, and I think he's now a good pro and will come one day.
A community around the world, stories and films with the most compelling characters, the world's finest apparel, explore the world of cycling with Rafa.
Hi, I'm Harry from Rafa Race Radio. At Rafa, we believe that cycling transforms lives and that riding is the answer to many of our daily problems and challenges. We have 23 Rafa clubhouses around the world with more than 300 rides a week going out, attended by thousands. So wherever you are, we invite you to come and ride with us. Visit rafa.cc to find a ride near you.
Thank you very much to Rafa, our headline sponsor. As you heard there, Rafa is a great place with whom to enjoy the Tour de France, either on your bike or in one of their clubhouses watching the race unfold. Tomorrow morning, I'm going to go and find John Degenkolb, another Trek Segafredo rider, and present him with the coveted Maillot de Pedler de Charme, the Pedler de Charme t-shirt.
What a weekend for Trek Segafredo.
Probably the best weekend in their history. Anyway, I'll go and find John Degenkolb and give him his Pedler de Charme t-shirt. He was a narrow winner. It was pretty close this week, actually. But he is the winner of the Twitter poll to find the week two Pedler de Charme. You can start your nominations coming in for week three as soon as week three gets underway, which I guess is tomorrow. That's controversial. Maybe you think Monday, but I think it's tomorrow, Sunday. Monday's a rest day. And you can buy your Pedler de Charme t-shirts and jerseys and caps at rafa.cc as well. Now, there was something else, I think, that Alain Galopin said to you, Francois, that you're keen to share.
Yeah, well, it's funny. You remember when we were in L'Alpe d'Huez, I might have been carried away a little by altitude there and a couple of beers, but by saying I'd never seen a potential two-winner pool for his leader, which is a little bit exaggerated. I say, well, the point I wanted to make is that there are different ways to manage a young up-and-coming rider.
We're speaking about Egan Bernal here.
Egan Bernal, especially a rider who's 21 in his first tour. Usually, and many teams, Orica Greenedge in the day did it with Adam Yates. I mean, putting him out in the third week, which is something Banesto did with Indurain in his first tour as well. And so there was a little bit of a controversy on Twitter, and that's fine because that's what we're here for. You know, create controversies, disagree. We do disagree all the time, the three of us. And when there's a fourth member of the podcast like Daniel Freeb, intervening, you can be sure there'll be more controversy. It was very fine, but in the end I thought, well, maybe I'm the only one who thinks that a young rider might be spared his efforts and build up progressively. And as I was finishing my discussion with Alain Galopin, he told me, so we discussed a little bit of things. He said, oh, great, I like you when you interview me in English because I understand your English. And the second thing he said was, oh, yeah, one thing I'm a little bit worried about is this young guy, Bernal. I mean, they're making him work too hard. Team Sky, I wouldn't do it this way. I mean, I think it's a big mistake. And I thought, oh, well, Alain, I'm kind of vindicated. I mean, we, the old guys of the tour, we believe that, you know, this young talent should be spared a little bit more. Different approach there. Team Sky have a different approach, but, I mean, you know, very often Team Sky have a different approach, and they're right. So, you know,
time will tell. That's the thing.
Yeah, food for thought.
It's speculation, yeah, again, really. But you would imagine that they know what they're doing and that they'll be monitoring him very carefully. But And it's fair to say that most people disagreed with your comments, Francois, including me and Lionel, of course.
But, you know, at some stage.
Including you, yeah. But we did have an email from someone. I'll read a bit of it. Alan McFarlane. You know, just keep your morale up and to reassure you that not everyone disagrees with you. I agree with Francois, says Alan. Old school or not, it is sad and does not seem right to see a huge young talent like Bernal in his first season used as cannon fodder. Any other team would nurture his talent, let him go for stage wins and or focus on the white jersey. Okay, pool once or twice for experience, but not every day in the mountains till he blows up. No doubt he will follow Froome and will win the Tour de France, and for Sky, the means justifies the end.
Yeah, but hang on. What are we now?
We're not doing this again, are we?
Well, no, but we're day 14 on the tour, so really it's just been two Dauphinés so far. I mean...
I don't think he's going to be pulled out, though. I mean, he's here to do a job rather than... The example, the comparison that Francois made was with someone like Simon Yates, for example, when he... when he was pulled out of the tour against his will. That's been a more traditional approach to give someone 2 weeks or so in the tour. But as I say, I'm sure he'll be monitored pretty closely.
Yeah, but if you've got Egan Bernal in your team and you've got to use him somehow if you're going to try and win the tour, it makes more sense to use him in the first week, 2 weeks, when he's fresh, than to flog him all the way through to Paris. And yeah. I think the way that Wout Poels came past in a group just off the back, I think we'll see a lot more of Wout Poels in the Pyrenees than we've barely seen him.
Sure. What Galopin said that in his opinion, what Team Sky did, L'Alpe d'Huez was excellent for the team, not as good for the rider. I mean, that's his point of view. A funny thing, an interesting thing, I talked to Egan Bernal this morning at the start about his position in the team and whether he was going for the white jersey, and, well, listen to what he had to say.
You're pretty close to the white jersey.
I don't go for it, really. Yesterday I was behind and I lost, I don't know, maybe 2 minutes, and I did it. I want to lose time because after in the mountains I need to be in the front with Froome and G, so I prefer to be focused in the yellow for the team, and then for sure would be another year for the white jersey.
So that was Bernal. I listened into what he said at the finish as well to television's Daniel Freib. He confirmed that, well, he said that, you know, his job is to help Team Sky win the tour, and that he's feeling tired. He said, he was asked if he was tired, and he said, yes, I am feeling tired. But I'm sure everybody's feeling tired. Let's get back to talking about today's stage and the, you know, any sort of intrigue there was behind it. I mean, I expected Froome and Bardet to go well on that climb, and Dumoulin and Thomas to perhaps struggle, not necessarily lose time, but just not manage to cope with the accelerations. I thought, well, Bardet didn't look particularly great. Froome was a surprise for me. I expected him to be quite frisky on there, and to me he looked a little bit heavy-legged and a bit tired.
That's right. I mean, we expected, like, what you know, as we say in French, an explosive rider like Dan Martin to do well.
He punctured.
Yeah,
the foot,
that's
yeah.
right. But we expected Bardet, maybe. We expected, well, I expected a Spaniard, so I wasn't entirely wrong there. But the riders like Dumoulin or Thomas who are more on a steady pace, you would think they would be less efficient on a climb like this, and actually we were wrong. They were very efficient.
But Geraint Thomas was the one rider who look to have it all under control from bottom to top. Froome could be bluffing, who knows? I mean, he was slipping back in the group. He even slipped off the wheels a little bit, perhaps not as much as Dumoulin, but Dumoulin, we know, rides all these climbs his way. He measures his effort from bottom to top, not necessarily, you know, in the moment. And even in the press conference this evening, Geraint Thomas said it's very difficult to race against Tom Dumoulin because you don't know whether he's suffering or just riding his pace, doing it his way. I mean, he is, after all, world time trial champion, and pacing his efforts, it really is his strong point. But I was impressed by Thomas today, and I'm starting to think, well, where is he going to get shaken off? That he for the first time as well, he said that he hinted that he would like to win the tour.
He's got this dry sense of humour, hasn't he? And so sometimes it's hard to know if he's joking. But yeah, I mean, he said that the priority is that the team wins the tour, and he said, obviously, I'd rather win it than Froome, he said. That's a quote, by the way. That's not me calling Chris Froome Froome, just for clarification. And just a reminder, no G on this podcast. He's not allowed to call him G, just so you... I think you were given those briefing notes before the start, Francois.
Did I call
no him no G? No, you've been fine. You've been not a misstep so far. But anyway, we are detecting, are we not, just the one or two little signs, despite what Andy Schleck said about there not being any friction in the camp. There are one or two signs that this could become a problem for Team Sky, because Chris Froome is the leader. He's a four-time Tour de France winner. He's going for number 5, which should equal a record. But Geraint Thomas is going extremely well and doesn't at the moment look to be faltering.
No. It's interesting, isn't it, when you consider all of the stuff that gets said about Team Sky and particularly about Chris Froome in light of the Salbutamol case, when you think of the boos and the abuse from some fans. I mean, the suggestion that maybe some liquid was thrown at Chris Froome a couple of kilometres from the finish today. The thing that they are more sensitive about is any suggestion that there might be a deviation from whatever the team plan is, which seems odd to me. These are the kind of sports stories that you would think a sports team would embrace. They're in a fantastic position. They've got the first and second place overall. They've got a cushion of 1 minute 50 from Thomas to Dumoulin. They're in a position where really they can react to whatever happens in the race, and assuming that Thomas remains strong in the Pyrenees, or at least in the first day in the Pyrenees, other teams are going to start they're going to start fretting that they've run out of time. And so it is odd when you pick up the sense around the team that they don't want any mixed messages. And I know that the sort of the managerial quartet of, say, Brailsford, Portal, Rod Ellingworth, Carnarvon, they all want to be on the same message, and that message is officially still that, you know, Froome is the team leader, but the priority is that a Team Sky rider finishes on the top step of the podium, and they will, I guess, they will have to take it day by day. But it seems odd that they would be sort of worried about this kind of internal friction, if there is any, blowing up and becoming a public story, because that is beyond their control. It's going to be the story of the final week, no question.
It's nothing new, as we've seen in the past with Froome and Wiggins, and also, you know, you wrote a book about it, Richard, about the 1986 tour between Hinault and Le Mans. So that it's not an unknown situation, but the big unknown now, I mean, when Thomas was speaking about it when he won his first Alpine stage in La Rosière, he was talking of big unknown about himself. Can he, withstand the third week? But now the big unknown as well is, you know, can Chris Froome raise his level in the third week, and can Chris Froome actually hold, you know, and resist, and after the Giro? I mean, the big unknown now, I mean, there are two big unknowns for the third week with Team Sky is, can Geraint Thomas for once, make it through the third week? And the other unknown is, has the Giro been a little bit too hard on Chris Froome?
There's absolutely no doubt, of course, that Froome wants to win, and a man in a pub hinted that if Froome does win, he may even go for the Vuelta, try and win all three in the same year, which would obviously be unprecedented. They've got these. There's a lot of ambition. Geraint Thomas may wear his ambition fairly lightly, but there's a lot of ambition in that team. And when you think of what Thomas has achieved in his career, particularly on the track, I mean, something that I picked up from his press conference was where he was talking about whether or not he felt under any pressure, and he said no, he's not doesn't feel under any pressure, because, well, one, he's not the leader; two, he's just enjoying his time in the yellow jersey; and three, when you compare the pressure of having to perform in an Olympic track team pursuit final after 4 years of work that's gone into it, you know, that comes down to 4 minutes. You know, that's kind of real pressure for him, and I think he will continue to enjoy the position that he's in. And well, if he carries on riding like this, if he rides as well as he rode in the Alps on Tuesday, I think then legitimately we can start talking about whether or not it was going to just come down to a showdown in the time trial. Who knows?
The Cycling Podcast is supported by Science in Sport.
Whether you're grinding up the French Alps or just taking your mates on a local loop, Science in Sport Rego Rapid Recovery Plus will help you recover faster after your ride, so you're ready to go again the next day.
Science in Sport, fueled by science.
Thank you very much to Science in Sport for supporting the Cycling Podcast, and you can get your 25% off at scienceinsport.com with the code SISCP25. Now, just to carry on a little bit the Team Sky, Geraint Thomas, Chris Froome conversation, and before we hear from Primoz Roglic, who Francois spoke to at the finish, the point you make, Lionel, about the sensitivity around the perception that there might be some kind of tension or friction within the team. That just tells me that that's a very real thing, something that's being managed very, very carefully. Because, of course, there has been before. There was in 2012 when we got exactly the same straight bat in response to questions about tension between Froome and Wiggins. But, of course, found out subsequently over years and books and interviews and so on that there was a lot of tension. There was a real flashpoint at La Touche Suire. One of the interesting things, they're very different personalities, Geraint Thomas and Bradley Wiggins. Wiggins is very complicated. Geraint Thomas is very straightforward. And that's going to affect things, but nevertheless, the kind of complicated one here is, I think, Chris Froome, and it's very interesting to look back at the relationship between Geraint Thomas and Chris Froome, because they've been teammates and known each other for very, very many years. They shared a flat at one point together. I think in Karata, they were housemates. They've known each other for a long time, but are they friends? I don't detect great warmth between them, but I don't know. It'd be an interesting question to put to Geraint Thomas, maybe.
I think the thing is here, Geraint Thomas is never going to get a better chance than this to win the Tour de France. It's like when Wales reached the semi-finals of the European Championships football. This is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. Secondly, in 2012, Team Froome very much were of the opinion that the strongest rider should be allowed to prevail, and they thought that Froome was stronger. When I say Team Froome, I mean Froome and his, I think, then fiancée, I'm not sure they were married, Michelle, and there was quite a lot of tension between the Wiggins and Froome camps that spilled over into the public domain. I can't see that happening again in this case, but that was their position then. Froome's strongest, he should be allowed to race for himself. Well, if that was what they felt in 2012, then they should presumably think that in 2018 and let the road decide, and we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, we know Team Sky seems to be controlling everything and planning in advance. They must have seen it coming. I mean, they had Froome on the Giro winning it, and which was, you know, kind of a gamble before going for a fifth Tour de France. And at the same time, they always said they would use Geraint Thomas as a sort of free agent, but in the same time they made him take the golden path to Tour de France victory, which is going to Dauphiné and win it on top of it. So they knew at the beginning of the tour that they had two riders following different paths, but the two of them could be in contention for tour victory. So they must have planned that before. And in my opinion, even in terms of PR, they must, you know, they should have planned before that, you know, what to do. So well, we'll see. It's intriguing.
But as we heard the other day, because we had our mole, Orla Shinnewy, in a Team Sky car with Rod Ellingworth, we could hear in the clip that we played on the Alpe d'Huez that Rod was surprised at Geraint Thomas winning on Alpe d'Huez, and that it did perhaps change things a little bit in terms of the pecking order in the team. And that was a genuine in-the-moment reaction rather than, you know, what you get around the bus. And that told me that actually this is sort of unknown territory now for Geraint Thomas, for Team Sky, because as I've said, he's not put together a 3-week race, and he still hasn't. And he, you know, for me, Tom Dumoulin is still the guy that looks the best in this tour. That doesn't necessarily mean he will or can win it, but he looks to me the strongest guy in this race. And if he's within 10-15 seconds of the yellow jersey before the time trial, you know, if Geraint Thomas cracks and Froome and Dumoulin are kind of together, then I think Dumoulin will win the tour.
Very possibly, yeah. I mean, that's the big thing we're overlooking but that gap of 11 seconds between Froome and Dumoulin. You could say, well, if the race goes in a particular direction and Thomas falls away of his own accord, we've got a really close Tour de France on our hands. But I just wanted, it's actually Francois's point, but I want to make sure it gets made. But when we were talking about this on our car journey today, you know, Sky have so kind of, so controlling when it comes to PR in certain ways, and so kind of almost blind in other ways. What is interesting is they don't seem to be concerned or particularly aware of the PR, the optics, to use an in vogue phrase, of sacrificing Geraint Thomas's yellow jersey for Chris Froome. I think if Thomas falters of his own accord, that's one thing, and I think everyone would say, well, he had his fair shot, he had his fair crack at the tour, and he faltered in the last week. But if Chris Froome is the undisputed leader, to the extent that Thomas has to chase things down, pull on the front for long periods, and then cracks as a result of that, and then suddenly, you know, Chris Froome's counter-attacking. I think that won't look great. That won't look like, you know, that I know we get wrapped up in the emotion and the spirit and everything and the history of the Tour de France, but I think that would be something that a lot of people, myself included really, would say, well, we had a business deal here, not a bike race.
Absolutely. And it kind of goes back to the 86 Tour in a way, and Eno's, and even the 85 Tour, you know, when Eno was in trouble and LeMond got away with Stephen Roach, it's almost like, you know, Thomas and Dumoulin, and LeMond was ordered not to work in that situation because Eno in the yellow jersey was behind but apparently coming back. There was a lot of importance then attached to the yellow jersey and what you do if your teammate's in the yellow jersey and they're in difficulty even, you know. And so, you know, you could make an argument that if Geraint Thomas is in difficulty, Chris Froome's job should be to look after him because
that's
he's in
right.
the yellow jersey.
I think it dates back to 1934 and my good friend René Vietto, you know. But it's true because his leader with Anton Amain with the yellow jersey in trouble, and twice he gave him his bike as he was leading the race and about to, he even waited for him.
He had to wait for him, didn't he?
There's yeah, he had to wait for him.
Sitting on a wall.
Yeah, in tears, you know, yeah. waiting for his leader. So
one of the great pictures.
It is. So there you are. You mentioned Tom Dumoulin, but there's another Dutch team to be honest. That's Lotto Jumbo, who are actually doing very well. And Primoz Roglic today won there were two races, as Lionel said, the race for the stage today won by Omar Fraile, but Primoz Roglic was the guy who won the race of the GC contender. So what can he do in the Pyrenees? It's another intriguing question. And I talked to Primoz Roglic at the finish.
Also then the breakaway came, but still, yeah, we all know Sky can do it. There are a lot of really strong guys, so they can do it a little more easier with control. But yeah, why not? If I can, for sure, I always try. And at the end was okay. Of course, it's not much 8 seconds, but better to gain 8 seconds than lose 8 seconds. So. Yeah, looking forward and try to stay focused day by day. It's still a really, really long way, really hard stages ahead, so we'll see. Of course, it's just my third Grand Tour in my life, so my second Tour de France, and still a long way that I will be, or I will know some more things, but so far so good, and just looking forward. It's also like I raced the first time this climb, so. Yeah, it's also new for me, but if I can, I try something. Still, I don't have any pressure that I have to win Tour de France or something, but still I can enjoy and race. Of course, you want to be as good as possible, but still, we need to be realistic how we came here, with what ambitions, and now so far we are doing a great race. And I just hope that we can continue on that.
There were two races today. There was the race for the stage and the race for the GC leaders. And in a way, you won that race, didn't you?
It's true. Because it didn't really matter for the GC guys if the breakaway will come or not. We had our own fight at the end. I'm happy that I could gain some seconds.
So that was Primoz Roglic from Lotto NL Jumbo. It was his teammate, Steven Kruiswijk, on the attack the other day. Roglic is fourth overall, still in contention, certainly. And it's the tactics, the aggression of Lotto NL Jumbo that gives us all a great deal of hope for the Pyrenees, because Dumoulin's not going to be able to do that. They've got these two cars to play. Another rider, Antoine Tolhoek, the young Dutch rider, was very impressive today as well, and that gives them another rider to help out in the mountains. That's quite well. It's good for the race that those guys are there and making things interesting.
Yeah, Roglic has won a string of week long stage races this year. If people are thinking, well, what's his pedigree over 3 weeks? Last year he won very late in the race the stage to Serre Chevalier with a pretty long attack, wasn't it? It was a really impressive stage victory. So we can be fairly confident that he'll be good in the Pyrenees, and the time trial won't frighten him too much either.
Well, let's wrap things up for tonight and carry on with our drive tour. We're staying at friends of yours tonight, Francois?
Yeah, absolutely. We're staying in a place, in a little place near Millau, called Le Petit Château de Roquetaillard. It's, I can almost smell, we're miles away, but the dinner cooking over there. We're in an area for a little bit of French flavor. There's always cheese in France. In Mende, it was more like Pélardon. Pélardon is a cheese. It's a goat cheese that's pretty dry and pretty good. And where we're going towards Millau now, the local specialty from all this area, Aveyron, is Aligot. I think Lionel has poor memories of Aligot. Aligot is mashed potatoes with cheese. Generally, it's Cantal cheese. But yeah, so I don't know. Maybe we have Aligot tonight. I'm not sure. We'll see.
It was, I think we've said already, a beautiful, beautiful stage today in a very remote part of France. Andy Schleck was waxing lyrical about it. They wrote a very similar stage in 2010, actually, and it was really, really brutal that day. So it was a tough stage today, an interesting stage, but a bit of a teaser for an amuse-bouche for next week. So let's leave things and carry on our journey. Lionel, thank you very much.
This is the Cycling Podcast, over and out.
Francois, thank you.
Thank you.
And we'll play out with a little bit more Andy Schleck reflecting before the race had finished on his predictions.
If Alaphilippe don't win, you will make fun of me the rest of your life. Said Schleck. Who is he? He doesn't know shit.
A big mouth,
but that's it.
You have been listening to the Cycling Podcast at the 2018 Tour de France. Thanks to our sponsors, Rafa and Science in Sport. The music is by Santoré. This episode was produced by John Mooney.